Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And we are here after Brian Keller, of course, just got married.
Yes, he got back from
Hawaii, and he had a wonderful wedding. So yes. Kudos to Brian and his wonderful wife, yes. Elisa.
How sunburned are you?
I am not sunburned.
I am heavily sunburned.
Yes. So, and Clint learned how to surf, so that was exciting.
Yes, yes, and now I'm in constant pain, too.
Yes. The wonders of life. So let's get right into it. And our first story here is actually one we have covered before, but it's an update. It's the emulator skin switcher. So the idea behind this project, and it is a CodePlex project, and when we covered it in the past was, say, for example, you need to do screenshots, you're sending something around, putting it in PowerPoint, or maybe you're actually putting it in the store, you have to choose what screenshots to use. You want to make it look as nice as possible, so you take them from the emulator to get your screenshots. This allows you to actually change the skin of the emulator, and previously yeah. it was models like the Samsung Focus and so on. Now the emulator skin switcher actually works with Windows Phone 8 and includes skins, for example, like the nice yellow Nokia
yeah, no,
skin.
Also has the HTC 8X and even the Samsung, I believe it's ATIB.
The ATIB, okay.
ATIB, I have no clue actually how to properly pronounce that though.
Okay. Yeah, so the point is just a great little utility to switch your skins and have really nice screenshots for Windows Phone 8 apps. So, next up is...
Continuing on the Windows Phone track. With Windows Phone 8, they changed the map control, and now it's powered by Nokia, and the phone toolkit actually has a bunch of useful controls along with extension methods to help ease that transition, along with there's changes in WinRT now with the phone where when you get your GPS coordinates back, they're geolocalized, and then you go, the phone toolkit gives you a nice extension method where you can do .to geocoordinate, and it just works now. The post also goes about some examples on what every method does and stuff like that, along with properties. It's really nice. Really okay. good post.
Cool. Next post here is actually from our friends at Infragistics, talking about what's new in WPF 4.5. So WPF 4.5 developers, for example, will take benefits from better performance of large collections and group data. So you can actually control how things like virtualization happen for group data, things like data binding for static properties, and even simple things, for example, like the ability to control to delay a slider. For example, say you have a slider and you're moving back 100 points, rather than having 100 change events, you can actually add a delay and say, hey, I don't really want to do this. I want to choose when I want to filter this data out. And similarly, another control that I didn't know about was the ribbon control.
Nice.
So that actually has the quick access bar, and of course you can do ribbons and several groupings of...
So it looks like they rolled that in from the WPF toolkit into the actual SDK now. So
yeah.
that's great.
So kind of a benefit for all WPF developers.
So going to your bag of tricks and bag of tools, LinkPad. This was a tool actually I had just recently found about, but it was actually in your toolkit that you constantly use.
It is a must-have
toolbox. So it's basically, watching the video, that he talked about using it with Link to SQL for part one, but it allows you to do real-time editing with your link queries rather than, you know, you go in, you hit F5, go, oh, no, I need to do this, then that, then this. So it helps actually speed your development because you just point it at your data source and it just works.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
And it does have built-in support as well for OData data sources as well.
Yep.
And probably one of the nice things is it includes a number of built-in queries, right? So, for example, if you are doing grouping, because grouping is something that isn't necessarily natural, we tend to think of things when we talk about relational data
yep.
as tabular, but when you start thinking about groups and hierarchies, having examples of hierarchies and you know using keys and so on,
yeah.
it's just great to be able to have something that you can kind of riff and play with. So, love me some LinkPad.
Awesome.
Next one is Nisha Singh, who we had talked about before, had built an OData app for TFS. So the idea is if you are a Windows Store, you're using Windows 8, you can have a Windows Store app that pulls in data from a TFS OData server. And what she does is actually walks through how she did the search contracts. So this is almost like a tutorial of File, add new item, search contract. Go add the search contract. See the list template that returns.
Yep.
How we're going to customize the list template. How we're going to build an OData query. How we're going to get the results. Build the link query to filter the results based on that data. So if you are, for example, looking at you're a TFS person, you want to, for example, learn how to do search contracts, definitely check this out.
Awesome. So this is by Lindsay Rutter, academic evangelist. So she's creating a complete Windows 8 game tutorial, minus the game. But it's basically going in and, as we know at Coding for Fun, making a game is hard. So this is actually, you know, talking about the planning, the design aesthetics, the details going into it, how you add in Windows 8 features, state persistence, making it socializable, so it's like Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. How do you do localization, so giving it more to a broad appeal, along with how do you market your game?
Sure.
So it's a 9-part series. This is part one, just talking about the big list of it. So
cool.
Yeah, check it out.
It should be definitely more stuff for us to follow up on. So next article is actually Blend for Visual Studio 2012. So a lot of people are maybe familiar with Expression Blend when it was part of its own thing and haven't played with Blend for Windows 8 store apps. So this article actually walks through a number of things, and this is specifically for building HTML5 and CSS3 apps. So the ability, for example, to use some of the designer tools, to be able to use the live DOM, to be able to see, for example, if you have events that are on load or on events, you can actually see them in real time in your page. How to play with some of the things around data sources.
Yep.
How to play with the MS Grid template, which allows you, when you're in Blend, if you use the MS Grid CSS template, then we can actually do things, for example, like finally control how we want to include tabular data, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to have a nice grid, I want to have this padding on it, and we're going to have a row of, you know, let's say it's 6 images in a two-row, three-column layout, right? So you can control. The whole point is
you're doing this about the layout.
Definitely two-column. But the whole point is you can control this visually, right? So I don't, like...
It hurts.
It spits out the CSS for us, right? By the way, Clint is hurt, so I should try and make him laugh as much as possible so that he can suffer from his surfing lessons. So, and maybe we can all just laugh and enjoy his pain. So, you want to learn blend tooling for HTML CSS, which is certainly new.
Okay, up next
story
is Entity Framework Pros and Cons. So, they had about, in Israel, 40 consultants come in and talk to a speaker, and these were a bunch of the questions that were asked, going from, you know, should I use EF in these scenarios? What scenarios work well? What don't work well? Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to, you know, load all my data at once and keep it in my environment. And they actually pointed out, like, that's probably not the best idea. You have large memory overhead. It's you have speed impact issues. And then it doesn't work in a distributed system as well. So it's all about, and along with the context for Entity Framework isn't thread safe. So it's all these things where what may seem like a good idea, once you start take a step back, it actually isn't, or, you know, sometimes it was a good idea.
Okay, cool. So it's really sort of real world examples. Hey, yeah. I'm using this. Should I use this?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay, cool. And our next article is actually a several-part series on mocks and frameworks. So the idea behind mocking is to build basically fake objects or mock pretend objects, maybe is another way to say it, and some of the frameworks that exist for .NET developers to do this. So for example, if I'm building a Connect app and I want to be able to test my Connect rather than me having to use the actual Connect service, I can build a mock service that pretends and has the same interfaces, meaning the same properties, methods, yep, to turn on a data stream that will return images. And your mock object can, for example, return images. Or you can, for example, make sure that you're testing for what happens if there isn't images. So you start building unit tests. that allow you to control what happens if, for example, we lose connectivity. So there should be an event that fires, and does my code handle that and be able to write through those isolated examples without actually having a connect, and you can imagine doing that. So a lot of stuff, for example, if you're not familiar with mocking and some of the different frameworks like Rhino mocks, you should definitely check out this article. It does a good explanation from part one all the way through.
Yep.
Good times. So cool stuff. And that brings us to our
picks of the week. Okay, so my pick of the week, you can switch over, is the White House crushes the Death Star dream.
Yeah.
So they had 34,000 Americans sign up for this petition, and they actually gave a couple valid reasons why, besides the fact that it costs basically 850, I think it's quadrillion dollars.
A study by Lehigh University. I love economic students that actually do that. That's great.
And then the thing was, why would we spend taxpayer dollars on a fundamental flaw where one man can blow up a giant, very expensive weapon?
I love it.
So it was. I enjoyed how the White House took a joke out of it.
And actually, I think they've now increased the amount of people that need to sign a petition to 100,000.
Yes, that did recently just happen. I'm pretty sure this is one of the reasons
why. I'm pretty sure the Death Star 34,000 jerks made them increase that. So my pick of the week is a simple one. It's actually the night vision with IR camera. So a lot of people don't know, in 1.7 we actually exposed the ability to have an infrared camera on there, and that what that means is we basically have night vision, so you can turn up all the darks and actually capture the data from the night vision camera, control that data, and of course you get the data back and want to choose how you want to visualize it or keep it or whatever. So this is awesome, if nothing else, for the backyard to have the night vision camera.
Yep.
We had the water hose to it, and it's going to be awesome in terms of keeping it.
So to do the IR camera, can you use an Xbox 360 Kinect, or do you need a Kinect for Windows?
I'm pretty sure it's just regular. It doesn't
both?
Matter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just we'll have to look it up. We'll put a note in case this is wrong. Yep. But it's real simple. It's just camera.enable. The same way you do IR sensor or camera sensor. So there's nothing magical about how you program it. And then, you know, you get the frame back load it in. So it really, the programming model doesn't change. It's just we've now allowed
It's one additional data source from the Kinect.
Exactly. So cool.
Awesome.
All right, that's our show. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.